and welcome to Playwright, a podcast about creating and sharing new ways to play. My name is Ryan Heyman. You can call me H.
And I'm Ryan Quintel. You can call me Q. H, I have to tell you something. I've recently returned to a game that I tried back over the holidays and enjoyed. It is the popular strategy game, indie strategy game, if you will, Into the Breach.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And so many people love this game, and I find myself enjoying playing it, but I've got it down to easy at this point, and I still find my butt being kicked. Maybe on the harder difficulties, it's more of a glacial pace. I think I've made it to the third island now, but I just feel so hopeless. Like the mechs are not getting better fast enough. I keep saving the same pilot because I'm not quite sure what else to do. And aside from, like, have you played this game? Is there hot strategies that I need to know?
I'm afraid I can't really help you on your journey. You know, I'm sure that there are strategy guides out there, but I don't think I would fare much better on the battlefields.
Yeah, there's something about it feels incredibly fair in terms of a strategy game. And so This actually all kind of kicked off where this past week I've been looking at Wargroove and Wargroove reviews. And I've sat on the eShop page looking at Wargroove for about 5 minutes going, do I want to buy this thing? And I was like, okay, wait a second. There's another well-known popular strategy game that everyone seems to like that is in my library right now. Fired up Into the Breach. And I got to tell you, as much as I am excited to try Wargroove, I don't know if it's for me. Maybe I'm a bad strategy gamer.
Oh, well, you know, I wouldn't. If you enjoy that type of gameplay, even if victory doesn't come quickly, then Wargroove, I will say, kind of throwing on my marketing hat here, Wargroove has pretty expansive difficulty settings, kind of like Celeste, where you can kind of choose what aspects of the game you want to make easier and what you want to make more challenging.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a little bit more scalable than maybe something like Into the Breach, which does tend to sit on the higher end of the difficulty spectrum. But, you know, I try to, if there's a genre you're not good at, but you still enjoy playing it, or you enjoy the at least the core ideas of it, there's always going to be a way in. You just kind of look for the right game, and maybe finding something that really clicks with you will make other strategy games easier.
Yeah, I mean, that very well could be the case, and that difficulty stuff makes me way more excited. Celeste was a game that I loved, but towards the end, I was like, I think I need an additional dash to keep going with this. And it's presented very plainly. It's presented without the sort of, for a while there, video games, and some video games continue to shame you if you want to go down to the difficulty, but I don't necessarily show up to those types of games for difficulty in the way that I, you know, revel in a Bloodborne because it's kind of the point of the thing. And I think it's a little bit, to me, Bloodborne was more rewarding from the difficult standpoint, where I just dying and restarting and restarting and restarting is less so for me.
I remember when I was playing through Brutal Legend, I got through most of that game on hard mode, I think, and until I came to the very last battle of the game, and I just had nothing but trouble. It was like hitting my head against a wall over and over and over again, and I just couldn't beat it. And so I had to knock the difficulty down, and then right when I was about to land the final blow, I knocked the difficulty back up to hard just in case, just to see what would happen. And it gave me the achievement for beating it on hard. I'm like, you know what? I did like 98% of the game on hard. I deserve that. And I thank you for not being a computer about it, because there's so many games where, you know, like, I'm sure I'm not the only one that has this story. I did not get the achievement in Mirror's Edge for beating the game entirely peacefully, because I think that I probably tested firing a gun just to see what it felt like when I first picked one up in the second level. And then, you know, for the rest of the run, I went through without using any kind of weaponry, and it was not awarded that achievement. So I can only imagine either the bullet like randomly hit somebody way off in the distance, or maybe just the act of firing a gun in the first place, even into the air, does something to invalidate the achievement. But I was very disappointed when I got to the end of that and found that was not given to me.
So we will, I feel comfortable retroactively saying, every pitch on Playwright has expanded deeply customizable difficulty settings.
Oh, sure.
And so just imagine when we come up with our ideas here this week and all previous weeks, all 87 or 86 previous weeks, that boy, oh boy, the option you're looking for, it's there. And we're not going to take away your little achievos. We're on your side.
Speaking of which, what is it that you want to pitch to us today?
Okay, my pitch this week is straightforward, but I think it could be interesting. A turn-based RPG that is wrapped in the theme of a debate club. So you kind of go around, maybe bus yourself around school to school, and all sorts of different schools have different topics and different experts on different subjects. And when you enter into a turn-based debate battle, you're able to sort of make points back and forth, and maybe it's combining things like sentiment and topic, or being able to pull metaphor and comparisons and choosing all these kind of weird options. But there's a lot that we could do there, so let's just kind of leave it at that.
All right. Starting the clock there. So we have a conversation system that's being effectively mechanically represented in the same way that a battle system would be in an RPG. And that's interesting. And I think there have been some games that do something with that before. I want to reference, and I know it's not a one-to-one comparison, but I always try to bring up at least some interesting game that plays with ideas. A game called Where the Water Tastes Like Wine, where you walk around a kind of a map of the United States, and then in various locations you can kind of settle on these storytellers, or maybe it's just people that things are happening to. You're kind of going around the country and hearing their stories, gathering their stories, and then you can use their stories almost like cards in your deck of in your hand, your deck of cards, to solve other problems down the road. And so this idea of taking these kind of narrative or conversational elements and then mechanically weaponizing them in a way is interesting. I think that in Debate Club, especially in a lot of RPGs, there's a kind of elemental rock, paper, scissors that takes place, whether it's, you know, Pokemon that has actual elements, or whether it's like in Fire Emblem where you have the spears, the swords, and the, I don't know, shields, whatever it is, that all kind of are strong against other aspects of the various warriors on the field. And so, you know, choosing to specialize or to create a well-rounded character could produce some interesting results that way. Let's talk about the debate structure. So unlike a Pokemon battle where you just alternate taking turns until one of the other people is dead. The other people, the Pokemon is dead. Not dead even. Whatever.
Fainting even.
That's right. I'm not a copywriter for the Pokemon company, so that's okay. In a debate club, there's very specific rules around like the number of turns each person has. I think there's like opening statements and you can offer rebuttals, and you know, it's very structured in that way. And so it would be interesting to declare a winner without that victory condition being the absolute annihilation of the other involved party.
Yeah, maybe there's some mechanic where if these things are happening in front of an audience or publicly, in my head, it is the fusion of kind of anime and conversation that you would get in a Phoenix Wright sort of experience where you people are kind of talking back and forth, and maybe like you, if you get action, like let's say you have a Hearthstone-esque system where you get a certain amount of action points that go up and up and up through the course of a conversation. Maybe there are certain points that you can make only once you save up enough action points, and or that allows you to make a grand gesture or say something with a particular emphasis or something. It's kind of a, you know, like any good debate, it's kind of persuasion at the same time as it is sort of oration.
I wonder if something like this could even be done non-verbally, you know? You just kind of have the general emotions that you want to convey, Whereas something like Phoenix Wright is all based on reading comprehension and making sure that you're tracking with the story and finding the appropriate piece of evidence to counter somebody else's argument. Something like this could be, you know, just based on maybe it's a wheel of like five different like lexical devices that you have at your disposal, and you can kind of play them off of each other. And it would kind of, in a way, almost be like a satirical look at debating, in just kind of pointing out that it's more about the show that you put on than actually what you're saying.
Yeah, I mean, that's cool. I like the idea of maybe also being at certain moments presented with kind of a multiple choice set of facts and picking one of those things, and like they're all very similar to each other. So it's serving like a second function to kind of educate the player even on these issues. So, you know, whether you're debating, let's say, you know, computer robot rights or something like that. Well, there's so many robot, you know, whatever the thing is, something maybe a little bit more grounded that there would be actual statistics on. But the idea of being able to use it as both watching a debate happen, being entertained by it, having it be, for lack of a better term, anime AF, especially with like those backgrounds of just lines that are continuously animated, even though the person's mostly still when they're shouting. I think could be really fun and like dazzling presentation wise, almost feel like a persona. And at the same time be like, wow, well, did you actually know that the average coffee farmer only makes this much money and they're supporting a family of, you know, X, Y, or Z? Okay, wow, cool. All right, so now I learned something along with this debate, and maybe even you can, there's replayability because you don't know which side you're going to potentially be on. Like, oh, you flipped a coin and you're the against at this point.
So maybe like a Persona game, you have a certain amount of time that you can dedicate to studying certain aspects of every topic. And so whether you want to become, you know, very factually acute with what you know and being able to respond with the scientific evidence in one way or the other, or whether you want to know about the history of debates of both sides of an issue around a topic, and maybe even if you don't know what side you're going to be arguing until the day of the debate, could be an interesting way to force you to kind of spend your time in a way that gives you a more well-rounded knowledge, or maybe super specialized and just hope that you're going to land on the one issue that you are confident and able to debate.
Yeah, I like the idea of going to a school, knowing what potential like topics the school prefers to talk about, or, you know, the venue, it doesn't have to be school-based, but that's sort of like the most down-to-earth thing. And then you have access to the materials and you can kind of use your bus ride, your classroom persona time to study up on those facts and then try and deliver them accurately and say, no, you know what, that stat looks really wrong to me for some reason. That would be kind of cool. So now you're kind of back in comprehension world and memory world. But also, I love the idea of the more dramatic the point, or the more dramatic the presentation of the point, the more sort of like resource spend. And the idea of, you know, seeing an animation of like, so-and-so was devastated by your articulation would be very fun.
It's always very satisfying when that happens in a Phoenix Wright game. Obviously, this could be a game that would benefit from Bravely Default's, or even Octopath Traveler's mechanic of kind of banking a turn and storing up, maybe kind of like intentionally not doing much on one particular turn to kind of save up for a more powerful hit down the line.
Yeah, that's a great idea. And then if you start to combine that with like the way Octopath, you have to sort of use a certain type of attack to find out if the enemy is weak to it. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's, you know, the certain way you make a point, or the certain sort of oration. Let's say you have access to just like delivering with different types of emotions. You can find out what kind of gets under your opponent's skin.
So I feel like this is the type of game that could be pretty well figured out, though, which I guess is every game, so I don't really know what I'm worried about, but, you know, I feel like it would lose some of the some of the thrill. One, you know, like in Pokemon battles, even if you have the type chart memorized, like there's still a level of unpredictability, whereas theoretically there would be an ideal way to perform a debate, and you wouldn't really need to branch from that winning formula once you've figured it out.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you start to bring in some of the, like, classic JRPG, or even, you know, to reference Pokemon again, the mechanics of you maybe can only use certain points or certain, you know, abilities, if you will, certain types of oration, or only a set amount of times, so you are also limited in the way that you can express a certain amount of points, because, like, by the end of the debate, you should be, like, kind of out of things to say almost. Mm-hmm. So some way of simulating that where, you know, you want to make certain points up front and maybe you, you know, want to build and get more forceful throughout a debate, whereas some people are like, they start very strong, so you have to kind of match them in energy or else people kind of tune you out immediately. So some, I think it's all down to, you know, taking the classic dialogue trees that we're really familiar with in games and assigning them actual limits and actual values of, you know, effectiveness and points and hey, even damage, if we want to call it damage.
Sure. All right. Well, let's go ahead and close that down and come up with a name for this game. What are we going to call this debate simulator?
Well, that's already a pretty good name. Man, I think you could.
You can call it DeBattle.
DeBattle. Yeah, DeBattle or DeBattle. I'm down for both, but I think
it would be up to the person who's playing to choose how to pronounce it.
DeBattle or DeBattle. As long as we get that extra E in there, it'll be really confusing.
Very nice. Well, let's go ahead and do that, and let's circle over to my pitch. Since we are so many episodes in, I am constantly looking over my shoulder to try to make sure I'm not repeating myself, but I always
hard,
get this
right?
feeling in the back of my mind that, like, maybe we've done this and maybe it was very recently. So we can laugh at me if we got this wrong or if I'm pitching something that has been pitched before, but I was thinking back to the movie with Richard Pryor and Gene Wilder called Hear No Evil, See No Evil, in which one of them was blind and the other person was deaf. And I was thinking about what would that be as a video game where it's a co-op game. I haven't decided the genre, what kind of puzzles you'll be solving or combat you'll be engaged in, but it's a two-player game. One of you is blind and the other is deaf. So let's go ahead and start the clock and see where we take that.
H, you did accidentally pitch Keep Talking and Nobody Explodes.
Oh, okay, yeah. Yeah, fair enough.
But that's only playing on the idea. I love, you know, since that's a VR experience, both people are kind of stationary or they can be remote. The idea of having to navigate an environment could be really interesting, right? Like, mm-hmm. It doesn't necessarily require, like, you want some real-time coordination, right? That's kind of the crux there.
This could be something that would be good as, like, a survival horror where, you know, hearing a creature, because I always think, like, in what type of game would the person who can see but cannot hear not be super hyper-advantaged? Because, like, I mean, I'm not going to lie, I play a lot of games with podcasts on, with the volume turned way down, I might as well be deaf and it wouldn't make a difference. So, you know, to play as that character and to still feel useful is kind of difficult. So maybe like a survival horror where you need to know where the enemies are and you can hear them before you can see them. And maybe being able to locate them in 3D space or knowing when it's safe to speak amongst yourself and when you're going to be overheard by an enemy.
How would we take the hearing away from one of the players? I guess, I mean, obviously
you
can
feed them audio.
Right. But I'm just trying to think of maybe this isn't co-op. Maybe there's something with an NPC or somebody who's guiding you, because you almost want to be able to kind of not rely on, like, okay, there can be an external. I know it's the point of the game, so someone could just cheat it with Discord or whatever. But the idea of somebody really having to talk you through something, and hey, maybe this is a comedy, you know, maybe we play it for laughs and, you know, bumping into things is half of the fun. But the idea of somebody not being able to see something, I'm trying to think of like what kind of feedback I can give them. I mean, I guess it's just audio.
Yeah, I guess that person could speak to the other person and then the other person would have to find ways to indicate what they're thinking without having the voice chat available to them, because obviously the person couldn't hear them anyways.
Yeah, I like the idea of potentially trying to very lightly simulate other senses. So hearing is great. You definitely want like great PUBG or higher quality binaural, like Resident Evil, you can hear footsteps and all that stuff. Directional audio, great. I wonder if there's a way to maybe temperatures or something like that, so you can kind of feel when you might be in a particular area, or maybe when you've entered the outside. Maybe you have a walking stick where you can kind of tap it around and get a sense of materials or space that way.
That's a good idea. Yeah. If this was in VR, obviously you'd have a lot of control over what a person can see and hear. And then giving them motion controls as well. I think the interesting part about being blind and trying to communicate to your partner, yeah, because they're the ones that are deaf, you have to find a way of signing things or indicating things visually when you can't see and you don't really know
right
exactly what you're referencing. So you're kind of, you can, you know, when somebody, when you're getting close to something, they can say, oh, you're getting close to the lever on the wall, you know, reach out and touch it, and they can be your eyes. Then you'd have to find some way to make the hearing useful as well.
I think that's one of the reasons why like VR is helpful here, because, you know, like blind or not blind, you know, physical command of your own body. So, you know, when you're physically pointing in a direction in a way that if you were going to just present inputs for the player, I'm thinking like the screen might have very, very soft, shadowy outlines of things. And maybe temperature is just literally the temperature of the screen. You go from like oranges to blues and that sort of thing. And you can kind of see, like, it's essentially giving you visual stimulation. And making, you know, if you are in a VR environment or if you're just playing this on your desktop, you know, something beyond, oh, I'm, you know, I'm basically in this for headphones and looking at a black screen and waiting for my partner to say the right things. And then at the same time, like, maybe you can, there's certain controls for like gesturing in one way or another way, and you can sort of get icons or visual feedback as to like which way you've gestured or like what emote does what.
Yeah, that would be a communication of information that the character would have in real life as well. So that makes sense. I think that's a that's not cheating.
Yeah. Well, I think one of the things that I'm a little bit inspired by lately is just how nice of a job Respawn did with Apex. In this is Apex Legends, one of their most recent games, that where very little actually has to be said over mic if you're really in flow. Characters are either giving automatic feedback or, you know, you just hit a ping button and if there's a helmet on the ground, it will say, hey, there's a helmet on the ground, in a way that if you ping a person instead, it smartly says, hey, this is a person. So maybe a way for the person who's doing the speaking to have a similar ping system to that, to very quickly kind of point to things, but it points to things kind of smartly in the environment. No voice chat necessary.
Okay. I mean, having voice chat, I think, would be interesting because you have to really rely on another person, but, you know, there's certainly ways around that as well.
Yeah, I think it would be really smart to do with, let's, you know, we'll say it's a set number of levels or maps or whatever. Let's say that these are maybe even Hitman-esque sized maps. I love the idea of presenting a world and a map with the size and complexity of a Hitman, with maybe the way that Diablo 3 actually says, well, there's of each of the five main spaces in this map, there's a potential of one of three or four configurations of each of those spaces. So you really do feel like there's, you know, an unexpected nature to it. Or maybe the fun is, like, you know, watching a speed run of this game could potentially be very interesting. Of like, hey, this person can't see anything, and just watch them go entirely on instinct and temperature and sound and navigate the environment.
It would be interesting.
Maybe we could have the blind person be a hitman.
That's true. And somebody there to kind of help them along. Almost like the interesting dynamic between, like, snipers and their spotters, the ones who, the snipers are kind of in their scope and they're very focused on a very small area. And so they need somebody around them to look around and to actually identify the targets in the first place.
Yeah, I like the idea of being able to have preset commands of, like, you're 6 o'clock, you're 3 o'clock, and maybe because you're trying to visually represent body movement to the person who's blind, when they, like, turn, they simply see, you know, a pie chart circle of how much they've turned. And so there's kind of a way to get your north, south, east, west, 12, 3, 6, and 9 bearings like that of, like, no, that's actually your 6. And you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I need to rotate, you know, 45 degrees the other way.
Yeah, I like that. Let's go ahead and end this one here, and we will title it. I think that the name Hear No Evil, See No Evil actually still works pretty well. We can give it the movie, the game, just like Street Fighter did at one point.
Yeah, and I think if you did want to make it these two people conspiring to do really awful things, then it's double fun of a name.
That's true. Be a real mischievous pair.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's go to the community.
So our suggestion this week actually comes from the Kane and Rince family, Kane and Rince's own Darren Gargett. Came to us with this pitch. He starts off with, in all caps, "I have an idea for a computer game," which is quite good.
A good way to start. It's confident.
Very strong. Soft Play Manager. You build and maintain and expand a Soft Play Center, spelled in the European Center. Mm-hmm. Much in the vein of a theme park, it's fully 3D and you build it out of prefabs. Very accessible to all ages, as I think kids will love building them in Minecraft-esque creative modes. And that's the pitch.
All right. We'll start the clock there. And I think I'll begin by asking, what is a soft play center?
Yeah, I had to do some Googling myself because I was like, I'm not sure what the heck this is. And so it turns out it's very much like what you would get at a Chuck E. Cheese. So essentially kind of a kid's jungle gym, but all of the, like, main geometry in it is, of course, squishy and soft. Hence, a soft play center.
I would have a lot of fun making one of those, like, McDonald's play places, those big plastic structures that, in, like, Roller Coaster Tycoon style, where I could, you know, maybe make slides that drop off into the parking lot, or make slides that are 500 feet tall, and then children are, like, they have the skin sheared off of them from the sheer speed that they're going down.
You know what? You joke about that, but I actually lost a patch of arm to one of those slides once. Yeah, at a state fair. I'm sure someone has video of it. If you have it, please do not send it in to anywhere. Nobody needs to see that. But yeah, I thought this was really cool. So recently I was playing the game Parkitect, which is, you know, in the style of all these sort of tycoon, those old tycoon games. But the system inside of it that really struck me, I don't know if you've seen it, is the way that you build roller coasters in it. And I hadn't played one of these, like, kind of theme park makers in a number of years. And this one's, you know, the kind of City Skylines-esque version of it, where you are selecting up and down slopes. You're telling it to build out segments of tracks. You're specifying track length. And even when you are bringing people uphill and downhill, you're worried about things like momentum of the track and bank turns to make them more comfortable to the people who are riding and not jerk them around and all that kind of stuff. And you even have to manage kind of slowing the track down by the time it sort of re-enters the station. And so if you like were to take a soft play center and do something that's even like lightly physics-y on top of that, of like what the materials are going to be or what you're going to pack some of these like cubes and bumps are, I think that could be really cool.
Yeah, I'm into that. So we have obviously these kind of like tubes and climbable things that people can engage in. What other types of attractions could we bring? Because, you know, I think that, I mean, even if this was, you know, at its simplest, like a hamster maze construction simulator,
yeah,
I see that being a lot of fun, but it feels limiting as well. What can we do to kind of open that up a little bit more?
Well, I think you want to add in some things like maybe child time management, where you are trying to encourage a certain amount of time flow throughout the thing. Maybe you create different paths for different age or size children, and different age and size children move at different speeds and have different like desires of intensity in their play. So you're kind of making all these subspaces.
Okay, so you're managing the different needs of the different people that go through there. I'm looking for ways to, how do we elevate the experience? Like, how do we make things, because, you know, there's a lot of people that play The Sims as a honest and hearty recreation of real life. But, you know, yeah. I really have fun when I can break the systems and when I can just really kind of override and make things absurd and crazy. What can we do to allow people that freedom as well?
I like the idea of, if you have access to the entire playverse set of tools, I like the idea of choosing different like gases and stuff to fill certain things. So you're making kids kind of like, you make a surface super bouncy, like impossibly bouncy, in a way that kind of like flings kids across the room and this sort of thing. So you're encouraged to do really kind of wacky stuff until eventually you're, you know, it's almost like theme park level in detail, but when you zoom in, it's kind of like you're just trying to cause the most amount of like child chaos with like avoiding collisions potentially, if at all possible.
We spoke a few weeks ago about creating kind of a Willy Wonka type simulator that was all about creating like traps, which is a different direction. But I do like that this does seem to be more kind of like kind spirited and actually wanting to do a good job. But maybe there's a little something for both types of audiences, you know?
One of the things that Parkitect does really well is your guests are, you can zoom all the way into the micro level and see, this particular person has bought this many sodas from you and they're wearing this crazy hat now and all this stuff. So if you could like have a kid level of detail that maybe you're creating specific sections of this play place to like get them hungry for pizza, you know, something. So you're trying to like bring in and pull in your like actual business. You're all trying to like manage, and you know, the manager of the actual business is like, hey, we need to sell more sodas today, so make kids do a lot of like cardio and don't give them anything to drink or something.
That's interesting. So you've brought up this Parkitect a few times. I'm familiar with Sim Theme Park and Roller Coaster Tycoon and Planet Coaster most recently. What is Parkitect? Where does that sit in the pantheon?
So it's fairly new. They're doing a lot of, it's either in early access still or it's recently left, but it's essentially a theme park builder that is doing down to like distribution management and making sure that all kiosks are actually have staff distributing goods to them and people are buying them and you're managing happiness. And one of the things you're managing the most, and maybe this pulls into this soft play center thing, is immersion, which is if the theme park goer can see something that is undesirable, then they're less immersed in that environment. So they give you a lot of elaborate tools to kind of build up structures that can surround or hide or engulf your actual park infrastructure. to kind of maintain the illusion of the environment. I think one thing that is fun about the idea of the soft center or soft play center that is, it's a play place. It's a jungle gym, right? The thing that's fun about that is, like, more than a theme park, I feel more empowered to be really gaudy in color scheme and really sort of abhorrent in palette choice.
Maybe you're almost kind of scored in a reverse way that you would expect to be scored. Like, if it looks really terrible, then you get a high score because it's really eye-catching and children love it.
Yes. Oh, so maybe like craziness of color palette plus craziness of layout and like complexity of layout, like, add to your wackiness, or like some like this whole thing has to take place in the 90s, right, where every kid's marketing thing was like kids' heads exploding and all this stuff. Yeah, and maybe even parts that like bounce kids in a way, or like they go through these tiny little tunnels and they come out and they're like shaped like little sticks, like they're very kind of like cartoonishly morphed through your play place.
That's interesting. And then you can have corporate sponsorships as well, and they try to get their products in there, and you can find the ideal place to put advertisements to make sure that the most children see it and get money. Because, you know, you have to wonder how those places make money other than just admission fees. They have to be, you know, making something else somewhere along the way.
Yeah, right now it feels like the business model is probably 50%. This babysits your kids while you can sit down.
Yeah,
and like,
that's true.
Actually eat a meal, albeit not a good meal. So I guess you keep kind of dancing around this, and I think I agree. I'm not sure yet what the interesting twist can be outside of just pure construction of it. Like, what's the end game? What's the goal? Like, you're not really charging admission to a play place, right? So it's not like make the most profitable play place.
You know, to circle back to a pitch that we have done before, is we've created essentially a constructor of playgrounds for alien children, I believe, like out in space. And then the various, you know, different races would have different needs as far as like how many arms they have or whether they have a physical form or whatnot. And then you'd kind of construct it to those needs. And so I think, you know, there's ways to explore side challenges.
Yeah, okay, so that's really good. So if you do the kind of Sims-ish, or a Parkitect does this kind of thing too, and Frostpunk does it, a lot of games do it. I don't need to keep going on with the list, but the idea of like prompting challenges in the middle of the play place construction. So it's like this is going to sound terrible, but it's like torture 10 children. You know, something like that. And so you're like, oh, I'm going to install those like Nerf machine guns while they're like making their way through the main corridor. And the older kids are going to man those things and just like make sure that these kids are coming out completely miserable, in a fun way.
Like a tower defense almost.
Yeah. So, oh, yeah, that's another great thing, right? Kids can enter in at a couple different points, and you're looking to like make sure that they get through the critical path that you're looking for them to get through. So you're controlling it, and you control it with like their preference of excitement or their actual physical size. I think it would be really interesting to like look at all the different sizes and shapes and desires of the kids individually. And for those kids to be like always a random set of those properties who are constantly showing up, and how do you, you know, keep them all happy?
Let's close that one down. Let's come up with a name for it. We have to work soft play into it somehow, don't we? I don't know.
I think so.
Or we can just, you know, we can come up with the Chuck E. Cheese style mascot. I think that will do well with the Five Nights at Freddy's crowd.
Dr. Crazy with a K or something like that.
Dr. Crazy's Emporium of Fun.
Dr. Crazy's Fun Emporium sounds like the scariest place on earth. But that sounds pretty good. Darren, if you think you got something better than that, then please leave a comment.
And we would encourage all of our listeners to submit a pitch. We are actually running low right now. And so if you want to refill our inbox, that'd be greatly appreciated. You can go to our website, playwrightcast.com/pitch. You can email us, playwrightcast@gmail.com, or you can tweet us at playwrightcast, or I guess post in the Canon Red Slack and we'll read it from there as well. Just however you can get your idea to us, we will talk about it on the show and we'll find a way to turn it into an awesome video game.
Yeah, even if you just had a casual conversation with either of us, you might find it ends up as an idea.
That's true.
On the show. Special thank you to Protodome for the use of our theme song, Hello World. And thank you to Kane and Rince, our podcast network, with great shows like Sound of Play, The Sausage Factory. And I actually listened to the whole Kane and Rince episode on Hitman today, which was a really great breakdown of a game that we talk about inevitably a lot, including this episode of Playwright. So go give that a listen.
That was one that I had edited, and you know, every once in a while, because I'm not on mic on Canon Rinse anymore, just due to my work scenario. It's one that I edited, and I kind of went into it like, "Well, come on, nobody knows Hitman like I know Hitman. Let's see how let's see if these guys can do it justice." And I was really I learned a lot, and I was really happy with how it turned out. I was like, you know what? Even if I was in this recording, I wouldn't have anything else to add. They did a great job. So
fully
from one
covered.
Hitman snob. I can say that, yeah, excellent work.
I was
going
to say, you're
Canada's
no easy
crew.
Audience with Hitman either, so that's good to hear.
Well, good team, good output. Q, why don't you take us out of the show today with an original miniature video game pitch?
Time to combine two of my passions, simulators and being a complete picky hipster. We're going to do Coffee Farm Simulator.
I see. I think there's something to that. All right, well, we'll see you next week.
Bye.